Welcome to Vicious Whispers with Mark Tullius, your source for horror, sci-fi, suspense, and all things violent.
Thank you so much for joining me today on Vicious Whispers with Mark Tullius. I am back. Now, I don't think I'm back for a weekly podcast because my life has gotten very, very busy in a fucking fantastic way. Everything's wonderful, but my time is full. I don't really have the energy or time to fit this in. Well, that's not entirely true. Just right now, that's how I'm kind of feeling about it. But this morning I woke up, I was like, you know what? I got a lot of shit to do, but let's do a podcast. I haven't done one in a while. There's a lot of stuff that's happened and I'm making a lot of new, you know, a lot of new readers are discovering the podcast, are discovering my work, are discovering the series. That's all fucking awesome. And yes, I want to say hello to those people. Thank them for coming over and let all my other readers, listeners, all that good stuff know that I'm cool, that I'm okay. I go through, you know, little ups and downs. I don't want people thinking that me turning off the podcast, me slowing down the podcast is me giving up or being too depressed or whatever else. Right now, it's really, I just lost a little bit of interest in it and I just have so much shit going on, you know, and I don't like saying that because I have friends who have real jobs and then have to take care of their families and, you know, and this and that. But with me, no, I do a lot at home as far as cleaning, taking care of the kids, cooking, all that. So I'm the house mom and I'm just trying to do a lot of projects. Plus, I also try to do jiu-jitsu every morning. Lately, this past week was pretty good. I think I went in 3 days, took two off because I'm still recovering. Well, still recovering from my tattoo. And my hip is really bad, but the hip is getting better. I'm being smarter. For those that haven't seen the tattoo, I don't know if you'll be able to see it on here, but it's the Try Not to Die metal moth. We haven't completely officially determined his name. I really like Freddy Fuckface. A lot of people like that. Some people like Bill. What else was there? Oh, Magnus the metal moth was a cool one. Craymore. We got all kinds of cool names. I appreciate everyone pitching those in. But as far as a name for the readers, the fans of the series, which, yeah, it's really cool to say that there are quite a few now. Everyone that is discovering Try Not to Die on /tag, they're like, holy shit, I did not know there was a choose your own adventure for adults. That is probably the number one thing I read in reviews. And that's amazing because then people go back and they read the other books and they're having a lot of fun and they're telling their friends. That is super cool. I can't use the words choose your own adventure in anything I'm doing because it's not a choose your own adventure. I am not tied to that brand at all. I had a cease and desist for even using their name before in advertising. No, Try Not to Die is similar to choose your own adventures for adults. That's definitely where I got the idea from. I loved those books as a kid. I wanted something more violent. I thought these would be fun. They are fun and fuck, we got a lot of them. God damn. In fact, just this morning, one of my good buddies from elementary school, I bugged him about writing one a long time ago. He's always been super supportive. He's done artwork for me. He's done a lot of cool shit. Yesterday, he sent me a message about a religious cult one. I'm like, fuck yeah, man. You want to do it? If you want to do it, then cool. Let's do it. So this morning he said, yeah. So another book. Yesterday, I had a 5-hour writing session with Coach West, the black belt, my instructor from 10 Planet Winter Jiu-Jitsu. Love the dude. We're going to have amazing conversations creating our tournament book. It's like anime, tournament of death type thing. Imagine Bloodsport, but way, way fucking cooler. So that book's awesome. All the stuff, extra stuff that we're designing around that book, amazing. It's helping design the other books. I went over two of my ideas with him yesterday, things I've been considering that were like, okay, these books are fucking borderline. Like, should I do them? You know, do I want to do them? How will people take it? So I ran the ideas by him, and both of these subjects are subjects that he's very, very personal with, and he thought that they would be a great idea, especially if I do them correctly and handle it properly. But the two that I've been considering are Try Not to Die Fighting Cancer and Try Not to Die by Your Own Hand. So these will not be taken lightly if I do them. These will be fucking incredibly hard to write. These will be painful to write. Not exactly sure who the co-author will be. I'd probably have Wes to do the suicide one with me. Both of us have been affected by it. I've definitely struggled with suicidal ideation a lot of my life. But the intention with both, one would be to raise money for whoever I'm going to donate this proceeds to. I wouldn't want to profit off of a book like this. But yeah, just one for people fighting cancer, like fuck, someone to, you know, just so others can feel that pain and to experience and to also see the love. When my friend Michael Parman was dying, you know, that was one of the things that really, I'd say, probably transformed me, because I saw the way that he handled death. I saw the love that his family had, that they all had for each other. I was like, awesome. That's how I want to fucking go. Being able to share that in writing, that'll be powerful. That one I'm not as sure about, but The Trend Is to Die by Your Own Hand, I think that one could be very powerful. Essentially, if someone were to read this book, how I'm imagining it, I have not written it yet, but if someone were to read this book, it would be looking at someone that has, you know, depression or whatever, suicidal thoughts, end of the line type thing, and then faced with all these decisions, like simple things sometimes, but do you call your friend or do you not call your friend? Do you? So if they were to read it all the way through, they would see this person making the right choice every time and fucking having a good day, good life, you know, and then knowing like, okay, yeah, tomorrow might be just as bad, but again, you make the right decisions, you're going to get fucking through it. So yeah, who knows if and when those will be written, because honestly, holy shit, guys, I think I have 36, 37, maybe 38 books under contract. Well, two or three of them are not under contract. They've been accepted, but we just haven't gone official with it. That was one of the things I did over this last month. I probably added, I don't know, five more books or so. So yeah, we have a lot of Try Not to Die's coming out, a lot of awesome ones. Now I'm kind of like, I don't feel overwhelmed. I'm handling it really well. In fact, on, I think it was Thursday, I had a shitload of work to do, but I had already set up something with my parents. So I was like, you know what? I want to go. I know I have a lot of work to do, but I also know it's more important to go spend the day with them and what that shows my kids. And it was an awesome day. I really enjoyed it. I had a fun day with them. So that was nice. Didn't worry about work at all. Able to come back, think about big picture stuff. I always have to remember, I was like, God damn it, I'm the boss. So I don't, like, I put pressure on myself. Like, I have a lot of mailings to do, but I was waiting on all the brand new coasters and buttons and bookmarks to come in, and those are all in. But it's like, even mailings, like, that's a lot of time and energy, mental energy, at least for me. It may seem like a simple thing, but, you know, fuck, sometimes I only have so much capacity. And especially like yesterday, I didn't get destroyed in training, but I was very, very, very tired. It was a fucking hard workout. So the rest of the day, you know, just not as much energy probably. But anyhow, the number one thing I have to do today is finalize the paperback for Try Not to Die on /tag. There was a major error in this one. It was a last second error. But the cool thing was with this, my daughter helped a bunch, because I just had her look at it and she's like, oh, she saw the maps in here and she did not like it. She was very, very nice, very, very gentle. She did not want to tell me that she didn't like it. She was very diplomatic about it. But I was like, no, I was like, tell me. Well, I was like, what's up? And she said, oh, well, the maps look kind of jarring. I'm not used to seeing them that way. I said, huh? I said, that's fucking awesome. I don't read a lot of books. I don't see a lot of books. And the books I do see mostly are indie. So they're not going to have, I don't know. I don't want to say they aren't going to have the best formatting, but overall, they're probably going to have less. But she gave me her suggestion. John loved it, and the book looks so much better. So I will go over that today very, very carefully, because I want to put this out. I think it's coming out in 2 more weeks. People are loving it. So excited about this one. Try Not to Die on /tag by John Cone. Not by John Cone and Mark Tullius, right? This one is John's. John wrote this whole thing. I want to make that very clear. Like, in, I almost didn't put my name on Try Not to Die at Ghostland, but with that one, at least I did some of the death scenes. I did some creation and I did a lot more editing. But on /tag, John did a fucking amazing job. It's based off of his book, /tag. He knew the whole thing. He designs board games. Speaking of, the Ghostland board game is coming out soon. I think the Kickstarter just went on, but that one is going to be awesome. John and Duncan are doing that. But for /tag, yeah, I didn't write it. I just an editor along with Lindsay Smith. So I do the first edit. I give it to her to make sure, like, okay, now you got to look at all the grammar, punctuation, all the shit that I can't handle as an editor. I'm just like, I look at words, you know, like, okay, and whether or not stuff is believable. And I focus on that kind of stuff where she's working on the actual, she does all that as well, but then she cleans it up. I do not have that cleaning up ability because my grammar, punctuation, all that is garbage. I admit it. I don't care either. That's why I have an editor. So that is not my strong point. So I got to finish Try Not to Die on /tag. Next up, The edit, and this will be fun, but the edit for Trying to Die in a Dark Fairy Tale, finally got that back. P.W. Foytz, who did Trying to Die back at Graham's house, the co-author on that, he's doing the Trying to Die at Meadow Spire Mall, which will be out later this year. But I had him as editor. Lindsay was doing other stuff. I'd already talked to PW about it. And so he just gave me an amazing edit that will take me a little while to go through. I'll go through the first batch of it, and then I will send it to Evan to go over all the style choices. I'm going to leave those things up to him, and then I'll go over it again. Then we will go probably to Lindsay to clean up the final, just to get another set of eyes on it. And because PW is finishing up his book. So moving that all around. In addition to that, I just got the full Trying to Die in Our Cranium by Mark Towes and Damon Minx. So that thing is awesome. Again, I'm not a author on that one. I'm not a co-author on that one. I'm simply the editor and publisher on that, which is awesome. So that means there's going to be another book out very soon. So I think we should have Dark Fairy Tale done and out probably within 2 months. The latest, it has to be out by the start of June for a big ad I have. And it should be out no problem by then. I don't know about the paperback, but it should be. Then Trying to Die in Our Cranium is going to be right behind that. Maybe a month or so. And now I also, that edit will take me a little while, but not too long. And then also I have Trying to Die in Brownsville by Jay Bauer, the first three chapters of that. That one we are going to do together. I've gone over a little bit, but I haven't gone on the computer and put it in. But the nice thing with that is I just told Jay, hey man, you know this story. You keep going. I'll catch up as soon as I'm done with these. And by the time I get that, man, yeah. So got a lot of shit going on, guys. There's a lot more. It's hard to keep track of it. But those are the main things this week. I will get that done. But as you can see, everything is happy. Everything is positive. Now, a couple of weeks ago, that wasn't the case. I went through another depressive episode. I was very, and again, we don't know whether it was because barometric pressure change. That seems, we've been trying to track when I have these episodes, but they don't happen that often. And then they'll last for like 3 or 4 days. Pretty fucking intense. Pretty sad. Pretty angry. Just not the best place, not the place I want to be. The one that hit me, I don't know, just a couple weeks ago, that one was pretty severe. I think it was triggered by in the morning when I was at jiu-jitsu. I often forget people that I've met them before. I'll ask them a name. I'll reintroduce myself to them when I've met them before. I meet a lot of people, not only online, but in the gym. You know, there's sometimes, you know, different people, and I've been fucking rolling for so long. And so I know people from everywhere. But this one day, there was one guy I introduced myself to, and I realized, like, fuck, that was probably like the fourth time I've introduced myself to this dude, and I knew him from before, and my wife was trying to tell me, like, hey, it's okay, you know, it's not a big deal. I was like, well, I know that I should have known this guy, and, like, as soon as I realized it, because I could see it on people's faces when I reintroduced myself, they're like, fucking weirdo, but, yeah, I just have to laugh it off. That one hurt a little bit, that one stung a little. But it was later that night. I tried going to class with my whole family, Liv, Jake, Jen. We all went. I really didn't want to go, but I was like, oh, because I was hurt in a lot of pain too. But I did, but just anxiety kicked in. Can't be out at night is difficult for me. Crowded place, difficult for me, especially a big room like that, overheated, or like lots of sound. I was like, nah. I was like, this is not good for me. Came home. Everyone else was so happy. My daughter had such a good time. They're dancing in the kitchen. They're having, you know, such a wonderful time. Meanwhile, I had to go outside, smoke weed real quick, put my feet in the cold pool, hoping that would fucking shock me out of this, because I'm starting to just get worse and worse and crying. And I realized I got to come inside. And then I just, instead of going upstairs, I go into the dark room and I'm sitting there and just crying. And I don't want to see anybody. I just can't handle anything. My son came in. And instead of telling him, you know, making some excuse or whatever else, like, he asked if he could hug me. And I told him, I was like, that'd be fucking awesome, man. That'd be amazing. And just held him for a while. Very powerful. Explained to him, you know, like, why I was crying, what all the tissues were for, that it happens. And it was just a good thing. And my wife's fucking incredible with helping me through these moments. And so having that, but again, on Friday, the next day, and this is an important part too, was that I was starting to rage. I was starting to get an elevated heart rate for no reason either. I'm home, everything's wonderful, but because I'm in this state, this agitated state, and it's getting bad. So I was like, fuck. I was like, who do I know that knows this feeling, that can understand this feeling? Because holy shit, this is not fucking good. I need to stop this. So I actually reached out to a friend. When this is something I generally don't do, but I texted a buddy. I said, hey man, do you got time to talk whenever? And then he called me right up and we talked for an hour and he knew exactly what I was dealing with. And that helped a ton. So shit like that is very helpful. The other good thing about this, it made me finally make an appointment to go to the Amen Clinic. We've been talking about that part of it. Like, I've put a lot of money and time into fixing up my brain. I don't know. It's probably been about $30,000 altogether by now. Easy. And so, but we had the money to do it. I've always told everyone, like, fuck, if you're going to spend money, spend it on your brain and fix your brain. So I realized, like, okay, mine is not fixed. I do not want these episodes. These episodes scare the shit out of me. If I don't come out of one of these episodes, what the fuck is my life going to be like? Right. So at least with the Amen Clinic, they'll be able to show me my brain in a different manner. I talked about them a good amount in my TBI or CTE book. I think Dr. Amen's amazing. I think his clinic is amazing. My wife went there. My niece went there. They both had great results. So I was like, you know what? Fuck it. I'll do it. So I made an appointment, I think the very next day, got in right away. And yeah, I've already had my scans. I haven't had the results yet, but I had like an hour and a half talk with a historian that writes down all your shit for the psychologist or psychiatrist. Had the spec scan done 2 different days, but it feels good being able to, I'm taking care of myself. I'm not going to let anything bad happen. The other thing I did was, I don't know what day it was. Fucking everything just kind of blurs. Because I only live for today. Today is all that fucking matters. One of the things with having a shitty memory, that helps a lot. It's like, I don't care about yesterday. It's okay. I forgot about it. Doesn't matter. Only today matters. Tomorrow doesn't matter because it may not happen. And yeah, so that's kind of my approach to things. But on whatever day this was, it was like a Monday. I've been in so much pain with my hips for jiu-jitsu. Like, even trying to do like a backward roll, trying to do basic movements, fucking just painful. Sometimes, it's the first 5 to 10 minutes, but lately it's just been getting worse and worse, and even getting in and out of a car. Like, I realized I probably need to have both hips replaced at some point. So I went to class, though. I was like, okay, I'm just not going to do that much. I'll tell coach I won't do that much. I'm not going to roll with any of the heavy guys because probably I'm realizing, working with the 260, the 320 pounders, probably not fucking smart for my hips. That's a lot of weight, right? So I made this promise to myself. I go train, and then I'm telling myself in class, like, oh, I should tell those guys I'm not going to work with them. But then I go and I fucking work with them because I don't want to do it. It's hard for me to say no. And that's kind of like, I don't want to fucking be like, hey man, you're too big for me. I've been the big guy most of my life. And so I get it. I never offended by it, but I still wasn't able to do that. So I went home. I said, you know what? Fuck it. I'm going to get a tattoo. So that way I cannot train. I can't trust myself on the mat. I'm not being responsible. I'm not listening to the guidelines that I'm setting myself. So I'm going to take myself off the mat by tattooing I didn't tattoo myself. I got tattooed. That was fucking brutal. So that same day, I sent the message to the guy who did my death vest, the Hive Tattoo, Tattoos by Elvis. Awesome guy. Just like last time, I sent him the design one night. The next morning, I am in. So we did, the first day I was there like 9 hours, about 7 hours of tat time. That fucking hurt. That was the breastbone. The next day was like 5 hours of tattoo time. And the final day was like 3 hours of tattoo time. Then I have to go back in a month when it all heals, when it's completely healed, and I'll go touch it up again. He's going to touch up my arm too. And eventually I'm going to have him touch my back. And when my wife was looking at the new tattoo, she's like, oh no. So now you got to get your other ones tattooed because they're all faded. And so maybe I'll touch those up too. I don't know. But yeah. The pain from tattooing, not a huge fan, but whatever. Looks cool. Gives me some street cred, right? All right, guys. Fucking got a lot of shit to do. I didn't even show you. We got little baby stickers. I call these the try to shut the fuck up and not die stickers because you can put them on your mouth. We have coasters. We have the do you have what it takes to survive coasters. Also have that in pins or eye shades. You can put them right through your eyelid. Perfect for funerals. Just get an extra pair for someone that dies. I got slash tag on, I died on slash tag buttons. I got some new bookmarks. So all that shit just came in. I'm going to put it with the books that I arranged today. But that will be after I edit this. I put out a newsletter. What the fuck was I going to do? I was going to edit something. So I don't know. I got a lot of shit to do. Oh, the slash tag thing. So I'm going to get to that. Smoke some weed. I won't smoke weed, though, until after the slash tag thing is done, because I want to make sure that I'm 100% there. I do not want any errors on this next proof. So I will stay sober for that. Not a big deal. I don't need cannabis. In fact, part of the Amen Clinic thing is going to be designed to cut down my cannabis use. Right now, it's pretty fucking high. Don't feel like it's a problem, but I also, my tolerance is through the fucking roof. So I got to use quite a bit to get any kind of effect. Again, not a problem. Everything is wonderful. Shit is good. I hope things are awesome for you guys. Didn't think about a story, but you know what? I will pull one off of either Twisted Reunion or Untold Mayhem, and it'll be a complete surprise, and it's probably something you've already heard, but hopefully not. All right, guys. Thanks so much for listening. Hopefully, I'll be back relatively soon. If you miss me, find me on Dark and Disturbing Fear-Filled Fiction. That's on Facebook. Starting to get back into that group. I let it go. I was going to close it down, but I remembered how much I liked the interactions with people. Generally, in my mind, social media is negative, but that's a positive group, positive thing. If you want to meet me there, that'll be amazing. Also started some new TikTok pages. I think it's Try Not to Die Today. That's on Instagram. Just look up Try Not to Die and you'll find it. There's one on TikTok. There's one on Facebook. I'm not as involved in the Try Not to Die pages, but the other pages, my Instagram page and my regular personal Facebook page, Mark Tullius, I'm on those. I hope you have an amazing day, amazing weekend. I am off to create some amazing shit. All right, later.
Reunion. Derek sensed the moment was right, leaned in for a kiss, hating himself as he did it. Beth wasn't ugly. She didn't stink if you disregarded the cheap wine. But he had no desire to kiss her. He just needed her to stay. For that, he needed her to feel wanted. It was already after 11 and way too late to find a replacement. Beth welcomed his advance. Derek matched her intensity and pressed himself against her. As passionately as he could feign, tried to ignore her fat tongue jabbing in his mouth. Finally, Derek backed off from the kiss and grinned. Wow, I wanted to do that all night. Sorry if it was too much. She ran her fingers through her bleached blonde hair. Her cheeks flushed. Are you kidding? That was perfect. She tugged down her shirt to hide the little roll of her tummy. Just like old times. Derek looked around his mother's outdated living room. He said, 10 years. Feels like nothing's changed. They were sitting on the same couch where he and Beth had had their first heavy petting session when they were juniors in high school. None of the old furniture had been upgraded. None of the pieces had moved since he was a kid. The pictures on the mantle and walls were untouched. A lot of things had changed in 10 years, but not this house. His mother seemed stuck in the past, refusing to change anything, especially Ronnie's room. His brother's room was precisely as it had been on the day he disappeared. Nothing had been moved, not even the poster of a half-naked Cindy Crawford above the bed, the one their mother had said made the place look like some nasty frat house. The most significant thing that had changed in this room was Beth, the girl Derek needed to convince to stay the night. She was a little heavier, but so was he. She was still bone white, and her years of partying were peeking out from behind the layers of makeup. She'd lost some of her shitty attitude, the insecurity. She had matured. Beth cleared her throat, interrupting his thoughts. This isn't your first time back, is it? Derek shook his head. I come back once a year to house sit when Mom visits her sister in Philly. I'd rather not do it, but she refuses to let a stranger stay here. She won't go otherwise. What about your dad? He split a year after Ronnie. You see him at all? Derek shook his head. The coward didn't even leave a note. Beth rubbed his arm and said, I'm so sorry. It's fine, he said. It's just not something we talk about. Mom wanted me to keep it quiet. Wait a minute. Beth pulled away a little. You've been back every year, and now, out of the blue, you decide to call me?" If Derek hadn't been expecting the question, he might have answered honestly. He might have told her that she wasn't his first choice, but all of his other old girlfriends were gone. He'd run through each one on nights just like this. It's hard to explain. He pretended to be embarrassed, took a quick swig of the wine he'd picked up at 7-Eleven. "It's just that with you, I was always afraid to call. I thought about you all the time, but I was so sure you would laugh at me and tell me to get a life. I know it sounds corny, but even though I never called you, I always had the dream of you sitting right here." He ran his fingers over her thigh. "Oh," she said in her whiny little voice that still irritated the hell out of him. Another thing that hadn't changed. "That's so sweet. You shouldn't have worried, though. I'm thrilled you called." She slid up against him for a smothering hug. "I couldn't wait to come over." He was grateful. It wasn't like he could tell any of his old friends the real reason he wanted their company. If he told anyone why he needed them to stay, he knew they'd laugh. He was 27 years old, way too old to be afraid of a house, of a room, of Ronnie's room. The thought sent shivers up his spine. Beth mistook the spasm for one of pleasure.
"Oh, you like that, huh?"
She ran her fingertips across the nape of his neck.
"Thought I didn't remember?"
Derek had never liked it. In fact, he hated it. But he couldn't tell her that. Even though she was dressed sort of sleazy, in a good way, this was by no means a sealed deal. Now was not the time to speak his mind. Instead, he snuggled closer.
"Just a sec,"
Beth said as she turned to the oversized purse that had yet to leave her sight. She took out her phone and swiped it on. "You expecting a call? I'm afraid the service in this house is terrible."
"I've got one bar, but I was just checking the time. It's almost 11:30. It's getting kind of late."
Derek's heart almost stopped. His mind raced as he tried to think of a way to convince her to stay. He'd shed tears if he had to, but he hoped it wouldn't come to that. Maybe he had misjudged her. Maybe she had developed some morals over the last decade. Maybe she was still sore over the way he had dumped her the week before prom. Before Derek could come up with anything to say, Beth said,
"You wouldn't mind if I took a quick shower, would you? I had a long day, and I came over right after work."
"Of course not. Do you have somewhere to go?"
Beth slipped the phone into her purse and played with her hair. "I was hoping your bedroom, but if you don't want me, I can go home."
"No, no," he said. "I just didn't think that you would..."
"We're both adults, right? And I figured that's why you called."
"It is, isn't it?" He hesitated briefly.
"Yeah, I mean, sort of. But I guess I didn't think you would really want to."
"Are you kidding? That was the best thing about us. I mean, you were always kind of... Don't take this the wrong way. A little weird. But you were amazing in bed."
"Oh, really?"
"Yeah. And I also know, even though you would never admit it to anyone, it must be real hard for you to be here. All those memories. Look, I don't want to ruin the mood, but you never did find out what happened to your brother, did you?"
Derek shook his head, wished the conversation hadn't taken this turn. He finished his wine and set the empty glass on the coffee table.
Ronnie didn't run away like people think. He just disappeared. There was no forced entry, but I know he would never let anybody in the house.
"You were home, huh?"
"We all were. We didn't hear a thing. It was something with that room." As he said it, he wondered just how much he should be admitting to.
"You don't believe that?"
"I do." Beth laughed, which made him feel small and angry.
"He was a kid," she said. "I remember he used to say there was something under his bed, but you never believed him. Please tell me you don't know."
Derek forced a smile.
Of course not. It was a joke."
He pulled her by the waist, his thumbs lightly pressing on her tummy, knowing it made her self-conscious. "We have to sleep in his room, and I guess I wanted to freak you out a little so you'd get that much closer."
"Very funny."
"No, seriously. It's either in there or on this couch. Mom locks her room whenever she's gone, and mine was turned into a study 9 years ago." He told the lie easily, knowing his mother hadn't changed anything in his room either. She never stepped foot in it.
"Really? I didn't know."
Derek leaned in and whispered, "I'll protect you." Beth laughed because his breath was tickling her,
Well, if you don't have a problem being in there, then I definitely don't. She ran her finger down his chest. We'll need more room than this couch.
That settles it. Derek got up and filled Beth's wine glass, told her to relax. Just give me a minute to clean up. I'll get the water nice and warm for you.
Beth said, You're so sweet. But it sounded fake, sort of like she was making fun of him.
Derek didn't care. He hurried to the hallway. He was hit with the smell of red roses that sat on the console table beside the door of his old room. Then there was the second vase on the bathroom counter. But there was another smell underneath the aroma of roses. Derek turned on the shower and covered the room with orange-scented air freshener. The bathtub was clean enough, but there was a filthy rag and toothbrush inside the wastebasket. Derek tore off several streams of toilet paper and tossed them on top of it. The mirror was starting to steam up. He went back and told Beth the shower was ready, that he'd wait for her in the bedroom. Beth grabbed her purse and disappeared down the hallway. Derek refilled Beth's wine glass, wondered how much she could drink. This was going to run a lot smoother than he had hoped. Derek turned off the lights. The bathroom door was closed, slivers of lights outlining the frame. As a matter of habit, Derek moved to his left and made sure his bedroom door was locked. He arranged the roses and walked to the opposite end of the hall, snuck a quick glance into his mother's room just to make sure it was empty, locked it so he didn't look like a liar. Derek paused outside of Ronnie's door, his hand frozen over the knob. Derek told himself to hurry up and get inside the room. What would Beth say if she came out of the bedroom and saw him standing there like a scared little boy? There was nothing in that room that would harm him. Sure, the memories hurt, but he'd slept in that room one night a year for 10 years, and he'd awakened just fine. Tonight would be no different. He turned the knob and pushed open the door. The room was pitch black. Derek felt along the wall and flicked the switch. The overhead light didn't come on. His mother had asked him to change the bulbs, not knowing all she needed to do was screw them in more tightly. The dim light from the hallway barely penetrated the inky blackness. Derek waited for his eyes to adjust. He saw the outline of Ronnie's bed, the one his brother swore had a monster under it. No one ever believed Ronnie. His mother didn't. Derek didn't. Then Ronnie was gone. Derek set Beth's drink on the nightstand, mixed in a little powder from the plastic baggie to help her relax. He turned the table lamp to its lowest setting and looked around the room. Although his mother hadn't changed a single object since the night Ronnie disappeared, she'd cleaned it every week. 10 years of vacuuming and dusting had left this room feeling like a movie set. The lamplight reflected off the trophy-filled bookcase. Less than a year before he vanished, Ronnie had led the baseball team to the state finals. Every player got a championship ring, which was the only thing missing from the room. The ring couldn't have cost more than $10 to make, but it was priceless to Ronnie. Derek smiled, remembering how Ronnie polished the fake ruby every morning. He refused to take it off, even in the bath. Derek felt tears forming, slapped himself to make him stop. He had to man up before Beth came back. He had to check under the bed for the monster. Keeping an eye on the dust ruffle that skimmed the wooden floor, Derek untied his shoes and slipped them off. The shower stopped and he walked over to the doorway, his feet sliding along the hardwood, barely making a sound. Derek called Beth's name and she asked what he wanted.
Your wine's next to the bed. Make yourself comfortable. I've got to grab something from outside real quick. Sure thing. I'll be out in a minute.
Before he chickened out, Derek knelt down beside the bed and raised the dust ruffle. There was nothing underneath. Derek rubbed his face against the inside of the ruffle and inhaled deeply, the mustiness taking him back all those years. The bathroom door opened, and Derek slid under the bed, made sure his entire body was hidden. It was too dark to see anything, but he could feel he was directly lined up with the middle of the mattress. Beth's feet slapped off the wooden hallway. He was going to scare the hell out of her, make her sorry for ever teasing him. Derek ran his thumb across the beam directly above his head. He felt the 9 razor-thin nicks carved in it. The beam above his chest had dozens more. The footsteps stopped at the doorway. Beth said,
Derek, you back? Derek felt further along the beam until it touched the leather mask folded on top of it. He rubbed the mask on his cheek, slipped it over his head. He carefully gripped the razor blade that had been beside it. She called Derek's name once more, but he didn't answer. He took the razor and ran it across the wood next to last year's cut. Jasmine. When Beth walked over to the bed, Derek quietly eased the blade back where it belonged. Beth sat down, her stumbly ankles not far from his shoes. Derek rolled onto his side, his shoulder pressed into the beam. He could grab both her legs and send her screaming, but that'd be pointless. He needed her. She had to tell him he wasn't a monster. Ronnie was wrong. Derek rolled onto his back when Beth brought both feet up and moved toward the middle of the bed, bringing the beams a little bit lower. He ran his thumb across the 10 little lines, and his mind returned to the night before they had existed. Ronnie had been acting a little weird all that day, had called Derek back to his room, had said that he wanted to show him something. It was 10 o'clock. Dad was blacked out on the couch. Mom dazed in front of the blaring television. Derek stopped in front of the doorway, asked Ronnie what was happening. Ronnie stood at the dresser, kept his back to Derek and the bed. "I got something to show you." Ronnie sounded strange, almost like slow motion. "Want to see it?" Derek was suddenly afraid to say yes. "What is it?" Ronnie turned around nearly as slowly as he talked, kept a hand on the dresser to hold himself up. He opened his left hand, revealed the orange pill bottle. "What are you doing with those? Are those Mom's?" It took Ronnie a few seconds to swallow. He nodded yes. "Ronnie, did you take any?" The bed creaked, and Beth shouted Derek's name, yanked him out of the memory.
"Where are you?"
She was getting too antsy too soon. Maybe she knew Ronnie had been right. Derek brought his hand to the beam with the scratches, all the nights he'd spent under the bed. He ran his finger across the top of the beam until he touched the bottle of nasal spray that was wedged there.
"Come on, man," she said under her breath.
The bed shifted to the right, the wine glass clicking on the table.
"I tell him I want him to fuck and he goes and does chores," she said to herself.
Derek brought the fentanyl spray under his nose, the scent intoxicating. With his other hand, he undid his belt buckle.
"Ew,"
Beth said, the glass clinking on the table, and the bed shifted. Beth's weight directly above him, the wooden beams low enough to lick. There was no way to know how much of the wine she'd had. Maybe he'd added too much of the powder. Derek prepared to slip out from the left side of the bed in case Beth ran. She didn't move, so Derek waited, his mind flying back to 10 years ago. Ronnie was swaying at the dresser, the orange bottle in his hand. Derek had hoped Ronnie was acting, just trying to get attention.
"Did you..."
He trailed off.
"How many?"
Ronnie tossed the bottle and it bounced under the bed.
"She hadn't opened it."
Derek dove under the mattress, shook the empty bottle, read the label. 30 pills. Ronnie collapsed, his face smushed into the floor, a foot from Derek. Talking through half his mouth, he said,
"I know it was you. You're the monster."
The bed creaked to the right, ripped Derek back to reality. The lamp clicked to the high setting, lighting the other side of the ruffle.
"Last chance, Derek. I'm not waiting all night."
She sounded a little scared, but not at all sleepy. If Beth had drunk the whole glass, she'd be passed out. The house sat on 15 acres and was surrounded by trees. Derek wasn't worried about Beth's screams. He rubbed the tip of the inhaler along the bottom of his nose. He stroked himself and let out the softest,
"Derek? Is that you?"
It sounded like she clicked open her purse. Derek had to assume she pulled out her phone. Playtime was over. It was time to ask Beth the same thing he'd asked his father, all the girls that had spent the night. But first, Derek pulled the lamp's plug, cast the room into darkness. Beth screamed, and Derek slipped out from beneath the bed. She was backed against the headboard, hands out in front of her. Derek reached out for her face and readied the spray. He asked,
"Am I a monster?"
Beth roared as a stream of liquid hit Derek's chest, neck, the bottom of his mask. He raised his hand to block his eyes, but the stream kept coming, splashing off his forearm, getting in his mouth. Everything burned at once, his lips, his mouth, his eyes all stinging, snot pouring from his nose. Derek ripped off the mask, screamed when the pepper spray nailed him in both eyes. Derek grabbed where Beth had last been. He couldn't breathe. From out of nowhere, Beth slammed into his chest, sent him reeling into the bookcase. Trophies toppled onto his head and shoulders. Derek dropped to his knees. Beth was still in the room, but he couldn't tell where, so he just lunged forward and threw out his arms, his hands slapping off her leg. She screamed and kicked, her foot crunching his fingers, knocking the fentanyl across the room. Derek forced his eyes halfway open, saw Beth scramble to her feet and make it to the door. He couldn't let her escape. Beth was coughing in the hallway, and it sounded like she'd bumped into the wall. Derek got to his feet, forced one eye open, blew strings of snot down his lips and chin. A doorknob rattled. Derek saw Beth, her right hand feeling for the living room doorway. Derek said, "You can't leave." Beth screamed, ran full speed past the living room, toward Derek's old room, the vase of roses smashing on the floor. Derek ran after her. "No, the monster! The monster's in there!" The cheap lock did nothing. Beth stumbled into the room, the door bouncing closed behind her. There was a huge clatter, then a crash, Beth grunting like she'd been punched in the gut. Derek pushed the door open, flicked on the light. Jasmine's still damp bones were scattered all over the floor, no longer laid out where Derek could easily assemble her. He'd spent all day digging her out of the backyard and scrubbing her clean. But that wasn't why Derek stood frozen. He was afraid to make a move for Beth, who had crashed on the bed, her shoulder buried in his father's ribs, her face pressed into the moldy mess on the sheets. Derek shrieked, "Get off him!" Beth pushed with her free hand, screaming when she saw what she was inside. Her arm ripped out of the bones, cracking a few. The sternum splintered and landed next to Ronnie's skeleton on the recliner, his ruby red ring pointing right at her. "Stop! Stop!" Derek pled, not sure if the tears were real or from the pepper spray. Through half-opened eyes, he sidestepped between Elise and Paula, who sat cross-legged, their skeletons taped to stakes driven through the floorboard. Beth batted at her blouse inside of her face. She looked for an escape. Ronnie and the Circle of Seven, all forever facing the bed, keeping the monster on top of it. "Help! Help!" "He has to be on the bed." Beth stopped at the panic in his voice. She closed her eyes and pushed the father's skull. It popped off the bed. Derek wailed, a sound he'd heard but never made.
"You can't!"
Beth's voice trembled with fear. She begged him to let her go. She saw what he was going to do, dove to stop her, but was too slow. Beth kicked down on his father's hips, knocked his lower half off the bed. It crashed down in front of Derek, the brittle bones crumbling on the hardwood. The monster was no more. Beth backed off the other side of the bed and ripped off Ronnie's arm, sent the rest of him to the floor. She held his arm like a club, swore she'd fucking kill Derek if he took another step. It was time to start acting like the man of the house. Derek laughed at Beth and pointed at the pile of dust and bits of bone by his feet. "You can't hurt me." Beth took a step toward the doorway, the bone held high, aimed at Derek's head. "I'll kill you." Derek lunged and Beth swung. The round end of Ronnie's arm clipped the side of Derek's skull, shattering both. Derek lost all feeling and smashed onto the floor. A pool of red spread out before him, the edge flowing farther and farther from his face.